And we will cheat a little bit on this version. We'll introduce a little bit more USF news than we usually do, simply because the American Athletic Conference waited until 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon to announce its conference schedule. And with that, finally, we can tell you what the USF basketball schedules are. So we will do that in this show. You will also hear plenty of incredibly dramatic play-by-play from what happened on Thursday night, where a game that was nothing-nothing at halftime and frankly wasn't exactly the best showing for the conference turned out to be one of the more exciting, let's say, finishes of the year. You can't mistakenly call it one of the best games of the year because for about 2.5 quarters, it was not a good game at all. But another example of what Tulsa has going on this year. We've said it before, if you've been listening to this show, all of the heartbreaking losses that Tulsa has had to suffer over the last few seasons, they are getting on the flip side of those, and this was no doubt the best example. Bruce Howard, who is their longtime play-by-play man and a really good guy, had some dramatic calls. You will hear all of them. The game-tying touchdowns, because the first one was amazing, the one on the last play of regulation, and of course the walk-off shot. You'll hear from the head coaches getting ready for the big game tomorrow. That is UCF and Cincinnati, of course, in Orlando, 3:30, a huge one. A couple more games in the conference as well we'll tell you about. And we'll also tell you about the reshuffling, and again, this impacts the Bulls, maybe, directly, because earlier on Friday, speaking of schedules, the American revealed its new football schedule for the rest of the season. Of course, there were a handful, more than a handful, of games that had to be postponed, and now we know when they're going to be played. And in the long and short of it, for USF's point of view, the chances of playing Navy seem a lot less. We told you about this on Bulls Beat. This would have been Thursday's show, the day after the USF-Navy game was announced as being postponed. The AD at Navy was already declaring it a no contest, meaning the game's just not going to get played. It's not a forfeit, just not going to play it. And the reason, which we described on the show, was that there were already two games that Navy at home, and if you think about it from their point of view, especially since they've had a little bit of a spread there at the entire Naval Academy, to be able to stay at home, not have to travel, that kind of thing made a lot of sense. And that is looking like it's going to be the case, because in this conference announcement, Navy's home game with Memphis is now scheduled for next Saturday, and the following Saturday, they will host Tulsa. At least that is on the schedule, and of course, Army-Navy is the following weekend. So right now, the only chance for the Bulls and Navy to play, it would have to be on that conference championship weekend of Saturday, December the 19th, because once you go even beyond that, you're talking about Christmas and New Year's, and it's just not likely whatsoever. Tulsa's game with Cincinnati, boy, this could be really interesting, and I had said this scenario was going to be avoided. Looks like we might have it again. I'm talking about the scenario of teams playing each other back-to-back weeks to end the regular season, and then in the championship game like Cincy and Memphis did last year. The Cincinnati-Tulsa game now will be played on December the 12th, so the December the 5th weekend is three games that were all having to be rescheduled: Houston at SMU, Memphis at Tulane, and Tulsa at Navy. And the big one, a little curious about this decision. Of course, you could not have put Tulsa-Navy on the 12th because that's Army-Navy, so I guess it makes sense that Tulsa and Cincinnati are playing on the 12th, but would not be surprised if they turn around and play the next week. I'm going to go ahead and put Tulsa and Cincinnati in that game based on what happened last night. We'll have those highlights in just a few minutes. But indeed, the basketball schedules released by the conference, first the women, then the men, shortly within time of each other. We don't have game times for the entire season, but we do have a first broadcast time for the men's basketball team. It will actually play at home at the Yingling Center on Wednesday, November the 25th. It'll be an 11:30 a.m. tip-off, and of course, with Thanksgiving being the next day, you don't want to go down to the wire on Wednesday night, and with a big event to travel to in Uncasville, Connecticut, another reason. Very interesting, and if you pay attention to my Twitter, sometimes I'll give you hints that I kind of maybe know what's going on, and I retweeted what John Rothstein, a national writer, put out there that, according to his sources, a lot of Division I coaches were having to schedule Division II opponents, or at least try to, for a season opener because it's, in effect, a preseason game. Of course, it will count on your record, that kind of thing, but since preseason games are not allowed for this year in the NCAA, this will serve that purpose. I think it's a really smart move by the Bulls. Of course, their scheduling crew, headed by Brian Gregory and Tom Herrien. If you missed the coaches show, try and get a replay of that this weekend we'll have plenty of them for you, but it was great to hear how he has to go through the schedule and how the challenges really reared up this year. But not being able to schedule that preseason game, wanting to get your guys playing together, knowing that you have guys like Caleb Murphy and Russell Chewa and Prince Odoro, but wanting to see how they look out there on the court together, that's what this will be. And honestly, even Florida College realizes it's probably going to be a Bulls victory and a pretty easy one, but it does serve the purpose of a preseason game rather than jumping right into the fray. And that's when we go to game two now. Rhode Island is the Bulls' opponent on Saturday, November the 28th. That will be a 5:30 start. Also on Sunday, November the 29th, it's a night game against Virginia Tech. Both those played in Connecticut. I know they were trying to get another game scheduled while they were up there, but it doesn't look like that happened. Instead, they will come home after their two games in Connecticut and be able to play a couple of in-state teams. They will play Florida A&M on December the 4th and Tuesday the 8th, 4 days later, against Stetson. Both of those are 5 o'clock games, and then it'll be a 2:30 in the afternoon tip the following Saturday in Atlanta for the Bulls and LSU. And then the conference schedule begins with two games on December the 15th, Wichita at Tulsa, UCF at Houston. For the Bulls, they will begin on the road the following night, Wednesday the 16th, at Cincinnati. The big story is that it will be a true round robin. Some of the conferences did have a situation where you were playing everybody, but you were playing both of the games against them in one city, just to reduce travel, that kind of thing. And I know that the conference thought about that, but really briefly, if you listen to Michael Kelly's pregame conversation with Jim Lauk a few football games ago, as a matter of fact, in essence, he said at that time that that's not going to happen. So it'll be a true home and home. Everybody plays each other twice for a total of 20 games. Again, with just 11 teams in the conference, UConn's no longer in it. You have that chance to play 10 teams twice each. Wichita will be the first visitor as far as conference play, and a chance for that to be the first time that fans can attend the games. Again, they'll reevaluate after the non-con schedule. That's Tuesday, December the 22nd. That's the only home game of the 2020 calendar, because they're also going to Memphis 2 days before New Year's Eve. And then Saturday, January the 2nd, yep, UCF comes to Yingling. If you're wondering about the return trip to Orlando, it's February the 17th. Head to gousfbulls.com for the entire schedule. On the women's side, all four of Jose Fernandez's team's games, non-conference anyway, are going to be at the Yingling Center. The first one will be next Saturday. We could tell you it'll be a 4 o'clock tip-off against Jacksonville. So the women are playing at 4. The men are playing at 5:30 next Saturday. So it sounds like we'll be utilizing both channels, Bulls Unlimited 1 and 2. Then the two big ones, December 1st, a Tuesday night against Baylor. December 5th, a Saturday night against Mississippi State. Both teams in the top 10. Both games at 7 o'clock. The following non-conference game is December the 13th against Stetson. So those are your four pre-conference games. Then we get into league play with the trip for the women to Memphis on December the 16th. First home game, again, first possible game for fans, if it turns out that way, is December the 19th against Houston. One thing I know the league was considering was having teams travel together. So you would play the men and the women in the same city, save on travel costs, that kind of thing. Well, that is not happening per se at all, really, except for a few exceptions here and there. But there are still going to be days when at the Yingling Center there are two games. So that's going to be a fun one. And the first one appears to be January the 2nd. We told you the men are playing UCF. The women are also at home that day against East Carolina. And in fact, the next home date, the next set of games, are both with the men and women playing. Wednesday, January 6th for the men hosting Tulsa, and the women against Wichita. I can tell you that those are going to be day-night doubleheaders, essentially. They will be spread apart quite a bit just for sanitary reasons to be able to fully clean things after a basketball game. If you think about it, you certainly need to do that. Chairs that the players are sitting in, all that sort of thing. So those appear to me, my eyes and my math, the first two times there will be two games in one day at the Yingling Center. It doesn't appear like there are going to be many games when they're playing at the same time, but believe me, we'll have the use for live play-by-play on Bulls Unlimited 2, not just for this Saturday coming up next weekend on the 28th, but for January late when soccer begins and then volleyball after that, all, of course, while basketball is happening. Now to the highlights of that game on Thursday night. Tulsa defeats Tulane 30-24 in double overtime. And if you just saw how it ended, you really didn't get the whole story, because this game, as I said, was scoreless at halftime. Tulane puts up two touchdowns in the third quarter. Something you would never do is what Tulsa did. After falling behind 7-0, they went for it on fourth down at their own 30-yard line. They got stuffed, and next play, actually two plays later, Tulane scores, and it's 14-0. But at this time, because Tulsa has already on three occasions this year come back from down 14, you figure they had them right where they want them, except it was a little different this time because Zach Smith, their starting quarterback, had gotten hurt early in the game, a torso injury. And then it was time for Seth Boomer, who at least was experienced. And on the next drive, as you figure they would, they get a 28-yard run on the first play, and all of a sudden they're into Tulane territory, but they get some penalties. And then it was an illegal block that made it 2nd and 29. And oh, by the way, Seth Boomer gets hurt. And so in comes the third-string quarterback by the name of Davis Brin. In his third season, he had only seen action in a couple of games, late in games against UConn and East Carolina. He was a quarterback at Champion High School. If you look at his bio on the TulsaHurricane.com website, it says High School Champion, which makes him sound pretty special. But he was in over his head, or at least it appeared here, because even though he made a nice completion for 29 yards on a 3rd and 9, it was a very controversial fumble. I thought the runner's knee hit, but the replay showed, and I disagreed, by the way, that it was indeed a fumble. So that answer back that you expected from Tulsa just didn't happen. So we went to the fourth quarter, and Tulane had the ball and really a chance to put it away, but they punt. Then the next drive, Tulsa gets a touchdown with 9 minutes to go. It's 14-7. They punt on the next drive, and Tulsa has to go 11 plays, 71 yards, and it came down to a 4th and 15.
4th and 15. Here's the snap. Back to pass, Brin. Brin throws over the middle toward the end zone. Back of the end zone. It's caught for a touchdown. Josh Johnson, he caught this one. And it's a 19-yard touchdown pass. Davis Brin to Josh Johnson, and the Hurricane one extra point away from tying this thing up. My goodness, what a throw by Brin.
Again, that's Bruce Howard on the call. It's tied. You expect Tulane to go 3 and out. Instead, they get a huge kickoff return, 64 yards, and they score on a 3rd and 11. Look like they're going to have to set up for a field goal. 19-yard touchdown pass, and Tulsa is down 7, taking over with 1:08 to go. All they did was get a 2nd and 20. They get the first down 2 plays later. But time was running out, and man, was this incredible.
A Golden Hurricane needing a miracle. 21-14 Tulane, 6 seconds to play. Sam Crawford, 6'1". Looks like it's going to be Crawford, Josh Johnson, and Santana to the right. One receiver to the left is Stewart. On 3rd down and 7, Brin out of the shotgun. Motion to the left by Deneric Prince. Brin has the snap. He steps up. He rolls to the right, rolling to the right, and he throws it high in the air toward the end zone. And that ball is caught in the back of the end zone. That is a touchdown for the Golden Hurricane. Oh, what a play. It is caught by Santana. It's a 37-yard completion for a score. Somehow, some way, Juan Carlos Santana caught the ball in the back of the end zone. 37-yard reception on the final play of regulation. He caught it. He got his butt down. The first thing to hit was his rump, and he was in bounds.
Unbelievable play. We go to overtime. Tulsa has to settle for a field goal to start. Tulane does the same. Tulane gets the ball to start the second overtime, and you've probably seen it, but the call on Tulsa radio was epic.
The big question is, if Tulsa stops them, are they going to go for it on fourth down or get the chip shot field goal?
I'm sure they'll kick the field goal. I just watch him on the bootleg here.
2 to the left, 1 to the right. 3rd and goal from just outside the 3-yard line. Pratt awaits the snap, has the snap, and drops back to pass. Big rush on, throws over the middle. It's intercepted by Zaven Collins. Collins left side, 40 to the 50, to the 45, to the 40. He may take it all the way. 20, 15, 10, 5. That's a touchdown for Tulsa, and that's a victory for Tulsa. Are you kidding me? It's a 95-yard return by Zaven Collins, and what can't he do? Oh, holy smokes! Collins takes it back all the way on the 3rd down and goal play, and Tulsa's won the game. Amazing. 30-24, TU wins. My goodness.
Did you see the stride once he got to the corner? That he looked like a thoroughbred, and he's being chased by receivers and such, and he just left him in the dirt.
And somehow, some way, the cardiac Kane does it again.
The cardiac Kane indeed. Now here on the Unlimited Unloaded page, if you were listening to us on the stream Friday, we told you we'd have an expanded version of it here on the page because, well, we're at the 15-minute mark, and that's all we have time for on the stream. We keep things to a schedule, but that's why we call this the Unlimited Unloaded page, because, first of all, we can really raise the limits off, and we unload even more audio. So get ready to hear a little bit more about today's games, but got to hear from Philip Montgomery speaking on his team. Oh, yeah, the Zaven Collins kid who he stumps for the Heisman, I agree. And who was that quarterback again? Here's the winning head coach.
All right. Well, words really can't explain that one, right? Again, I'm just so proud of our young men. Words can't really explain it, but the one thing I can explain is that is just a special group of guys down there. It took every one of them, took all three phases. Tulane is a really good football team, came in here on a roll with three wins. So take no credit off of that part of it. Don't know that we played our best ball tonight, but we found a way to win. And that's the best way that I can explain it. And those guys down there in that locker room, they believe in each other. They're going to fight for 60 minutes, every second of it, and it took every second of it tonight. Couldn't be more proud. Obviously, over the course of my career, we've been a part of some really good teams, been fortunate to do that, and we've had some comeback wins, but not this many of them, right? And that many of them in a row. They just fight, and they don't give up on each other. And I'm just happy to be a part of it. Here's what I'll say about Zaven. I mean, unbelievable kid, unbelievable teammate, great leader, makes plays at big times. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I mean, why is that guy not in the running for the Heisman? Tell me somebody else that has affected more games than that guy. I mean, if we want to talk about the best football players in college football, in my opinion, I mean, he's there. He's a part of it. You know, whether it's picks to end games, that's two back-to-back. He took this one back for a touchdown. You know, game-saving tackles. You know, tackle for losses, sacks. To me, he ought to be in the conversation. I know that's just little old coach up here saying that, but why is he not? What? Yeah, I mean, I wanted to bunch the receivers out to the right. We motioned the back out to the left. Obviously, that bunch, you know, we got a little bit of cross through it and then told them to stay tight together as they're going down the field. And then, obviously, it's a Hail Mary type play, right? You know, JC, boy, you can't say enough about him. I mean, just Davis threw a nice ball. He stepped out of the way of a little bit of pressure and then stepped up and threw it. Allowed those guys a little bit of time to get down there in the end zone. And then, you know, got hit, I believe, right as he threw. And JC just went up two-handed and made an unbelievable catch. I mean, unbelievable catch. And Keelan goes down tonight. Zach goes down tonight. Seth goes down tonight. I mean, we lost quite a few weapons offensively. TK wasn't 100% tonight. And just guys stepped up. We had to move a lot of receivers around and do some different things with them. They took advantage of the opportunity they had in there, and they all believe in themselves. They're confident, and they made plays. Davis just prepares himself that way every day, and he views himself as a starter every day. So when he gets in, you know, it goes back to when he first got here. I mean, I remember watching him on tape, and you know, Zach may have been going or whatever, and as he was just learning the offense, he's standing behind it and going through every action. He's, you know, every verbal communication that you got to say to our offensive line, going through all of that, and then, you know, he's just progressed over the years, and he's a guy, again, with a ton of confidence in himself. He really fits what we're looking for, and he played unbelievable tonight.
And speaking of unbelievable, got to get the man himself, Zaven Collins, on that entire play.
I think it's just being in the right place at the right time, everyone around me doing their job. Right there at that last play, we were manned up, bringing two off the edge, bringing me and the mic. I end up getting the guard and the running back stepping up at me. So I backed out, sat under the three drag from the backside. I didn't see it. I just kind of backpedaled straight back and ended up, you know, being fortunate enough to pick that ball off and just being able to put myself in, you know, good position. So That's about it.
So when you caught it, were you thinking, go on, go for it?
Yes, sir. I was going for the win. There was not much else I could do there besides run as fast as I can, as far as I can. Luckily enough, J-Dub is the middle linebacker, Justin Wright. J-Dub, he hit the cue pretty good, and I was kind of by myself when I took off.
So they are 5-0, 5-1 overall, while the Cincinnati Bearcats also 5-0 and 7-0, but they will get tested on Saturday afternoon. 3:30 kickoff, UCF the opponent. As we know, the Knights, one of the best offenses, in fact, rated number one in the country in yards, Cincinnati top 10 in defense, and really getting much better offensive play from the quarterback, Desmond Ridder. This is going to be some game. Let's start off first with Josh Heupel of UCF. Last year in Ohio, it was 27-24 Cincinnati, and what killed UCF was having to settle for short field goals, three of them specifically, none longer than 31 yards. So he was asked about the importance of red zone offense in this game before transitioning into the Bearcats' talent.
Huge part of the game on both sides of the ball for us, you know, that typically in big ball games is a big part. You know, there's a huge difference between getting 7 points and getting 3 points. So got to be efficient, got to operate, and got to win some one-on-ones out on the perimeter if you're throwing the ball, but you got to be able to run the football too. They're big, strong, physical up front, physical runners with the ball in their hands. Quarterback's dynamic too in that way. And so you got to be gap sound, first of all, to stop the run. And then you got to be able to tackle in space. And, you know, the way that he's developed as a passer too, you got to do a great job on the perimeter. They got playmakers out there. And he's accurate with the football, been really decisive too. So, you know, on defense, you got to play a complete game. You got to play well on all three levels to have an opportunity to limit their big plays.
And personally, just any win in Orlando would be enough to impress, or should be enough to impress, a college football playoff committee. But Luke Fickell asked, are style points important? In other words, do you really have to put on a show, not just a win?
I mean, to me, style points are uniforms. Unfortunately, style points for, you know, if you're really talking about what you're talking about in college football, it has too much to do with, you know, the name on your chest and the history that you have. Yes, I understand that, you know, playing well does a lot for you, and winning obviously is the number one thing. But people can talk about style points all they want. By nature, the blue bloods have style. And until we can get past all of that at some point in time, it's going to be what it is. So I don't buy into it a lot. I know this, and I'll always stick with it. No matter what the situation, you got to be playing your best ball to have a chance at the end. If you're not one of the top 6-7 teams with the history and are undefeated, you're going to have to be playing your best football at the end of the year. If that means you're winning big, it means you're winning big. You got some big games that you don't have to win huge. You just got to win, but you got to do it in a really good fashion, in a really clean fashion, in the way that your program can continue to do no matter who they're playing.
That is on ESPN, and you probably should have ESPN Plus by now. It's going to have all of the basketball games that aren't over the air, so today's a good day to jump in and watch some football at noon on ESPN Plus, because the other two games involving league teams kick off at that time and on that venue. East Carolina at Temple, been dominated by the Owls since they joined the American. Temple has won all six of the meetings. Actually, ECU held a 7-4 series lead going into this conference. They played each other every year from 1982 to 1990. And gotta say it, this is the only win has been against the Bulls Bowl, as East Carolina comes in 1-6. Temple comes in 1-5. The other game, pretty interesting from the opponent angle. Memphis is hosting Stephen F. Austin. The Lumberjacks were one of a few teams from the Southland Conference that, when that league announced it was not going to play football in the fall, said, you know what, we're going to get together a schedule and play in the fall. And they were probably regretting that decision after they started off 0-3, but that was against FBS teams, including a 50-7 loss to SMU. But then they got on to their level of competition and have rolled since. They have won six games in a row, and this wraps up their season. Incidentally, a few weeks after the Southland said they wouldn't be playing football in the fall, they announced they are going to play in the spring, so the seven holdouts are going to get some action going in the spring. But this will be it for the Lumberjacks. That's Memphis's opponent. So on Monday's conference show, we'll wrap up everything and we'll start to look forward to basketball season. Busy times now, all of a sudden, right? Thanks for checking us out on the USF Bulls Unlimited Unloaded page. I'm Derek Sharp.